There's two things now, Chris. The first is find someone who has already achieved what you're trying to achieve. There comes to like a point where you should be putting a dollar value on your free time, because a lot of people put a dollar value on their 9 to 5, and that's a really easy concept to get your mind around. Like, but what's more important than like the time you spend in 9 to 5 is that like your 5 to 9, what are you doing outside? Well, software engineering was just a means to an end. I feel like there's like a false reality of like, hey, if you learn to code and you study, you will get a job, you will break into tech, and you will make money like we do. But that's like the end product, like I was mentioning before. That's the glamour. What we don't show is...
Jeremiah.
Yes.
What is the one thing that you want to be able to share with the world?
My story is that I am not special. Like, all these things that I've done and have achieved... I want to show people that, like, I was just a regular person who opened my laptop, took a coding course, and then just tried really hard. So I want that to be the story, the message that people can take away from me.
What do you mean you're not special?
Everyone that, like, reaches out to me in my DMs is like, yo, how did you break into tech? How did you learn to code? And I'm like, okay, we're not doing something for the first time. It's already been done. For my case, I look for someone who already did it, and in this case, it was a person called Chris Sean. So he went through all like the hard parts, figured out all of the things you needed to learn, how you need to get your foot in the door. And I'm like, I'm just going to recreate that process, because Chris Sean's not special. I'm not special. But we just need to follow like the path to success that's already been laid out by other people.
I think you're being a little bit too harsh on yourself. But dude, you went to military for around 6 years.
Yeah, six years.
And your first tech job is as a senior developer advocate, and not at a startup, not a small company, at a great company, right?
At a great company.
That, and you're traveling the world, right? Mm-hmm. I think you are undervaluing yourself too much. But one thing I wanted to bring up is that people see you traveling around the world. It looks so exciting on pictures, but is it really as exciting as it looks like?
It's a double-edged sword, because I know developer advocates can travel, but there's a point where it's too much travel to where you are barely in your own city for like longer than 2 weeks. So I think it's just what type of person you are, because summer trips are great. I went to Korea. It was a blast. I learned a lot about their culture. And then 2 days ago, I got back from Utah. It was a smaller blast, but yeah, a lot of travel, a lot of different things. It depends who you are, like if you can bounce back from like traveling a bunch.
Are you happy?
Incredibly. Happiest I've ever been.
How come?
Just like understanding like my future, understanding where I am right now, and just knowing. Like the last couple of years I was in the military, I was like, I think I'm a good software engineer, but I don't know if I'm a good software engineer like outside of the military. Will I get a job? Where will I live? Will I be able to like have a family? But now all of these things are like starting to like take shape, and I can see the future, and I think it looks good.
It seems like everything's just happening all at once, right?
Yeah, it's just a lot of changes. Like within the last year, I got a new job, I got a new house, I got engaged, traveling the world.
Looking at your life in the military, everyone in the military, not everyone, but a lot of people, and I have friends there too, who have no idea what they're going to do after. There are people like that. And there are people like you who became a software engineer in the military after taking your is that called the ASVAB? What is that called? What test do you take?
Yeah, after getting my original MOS.
Yeah, original like MOS. And you became a software engineer in the military, then a product lead, analyst, you name it, right? Did you think you would be anywhere near where you are today?
No. I was hoping for like maybe... a junior level position at like Meta. Meta was like Facebook at the time. Yeah. It was like my dream company. And I was like, if I can just become like a entry level software engineer at Facebook, I've made it.
Was it because of all the day in the life videos? Was it because of Joma Tech? why Facebook?
I think it was because of like the social network. I like influenced a lot of people, the movie about Facebook, as well as like just the story of Mark Zuckerberg himself, like how he built this empire from his like dorm room. Anything is possible at this company. They're building these amazing tools that everyone uses. So yeah. I was like, it'd be so cool to work there.
Yeah. And you're doing pretty well now at Slack. And the reason I brought up the military too, where a lot of people don't know what's going on. There's a lot of people who are trying to dive into tech right now who mm-hmm. feel like they wasted it. You know, it felt me too. And at 27, I became an engineer, a junior, a very junior engineer. And I had no idea. I wasted a lot of time before that. A lot of people felt like they did the same, right? And so mm-hmm. what is it that you think you did to help you get to where you are today from military-wise, right? Why did you learn how to code? And how did you better prepare for the life after the military?
I think the biggest thing was like looking outside of my circle, because my circle was military people. They were making like $50,000 a year. They're super happy. They did well in the military, get promoted every 2 years, but that was it. So once I started to look outside of my circle and like, whoa, my brother is a product designer. I have no idea what that is, but I'm gonna look for a day in the life video. This Chris Sean guy is a software engineer. He can work from home remotely. Okay, I like that. So I started looking, again, outside of my circle at things that were attainable, things that were achievable, and I like dedicated all my time, effort, and energy to making those things happen for me as well.
That makes sense. That makes sense because I remember before tech, when I was learning how to code on Treehouse, and by the way, I don't recommend them no more. I recommend Zero to Mastery, link in the description below. you don't have to use them. You can use Free Code Camp. They're free. But when I started learning code on Treehouse at 26 years old, I remember telling my friends, hey, I watched this video, right? These rappers, this NBA player, Chris Bosh from NBA said, you don't need to be smart to be an engineer. Bill Gates says you don't have to be smart to be an engineer, and et cetera. I'm not smart, so I guess I can become one. Yo, let's all learn together. All of my friends, who I still hang out with when I go back to California, all of them didn't want to learn with me. And the main reason was it's not going to work out, right? The mindset it was, Chris, we're already struggling. Don't have these big dreams that you'll become a software engineer and make six figures, right? And that makes sense because everyone in that circle was struggling. Every one of us was living paycheck to paycheck. None of us could afford our own place. We all lived with each other, or I was renting a closet in a garage of my friend's house to survive, right? And so no one wanted to learn with me. And I could have easily allowed that to affect me because my circle of friends, everyone was doing the same thing, which was smoking weed and gaming all day. You know what I mean? And just doing it, you know what I mean?
Easy option.
I could have easily gave in to that. But thank God, because of someone like Gary Vee, I was like, nope, I'm not. I'm going to really push for it. I could have easily given to my circle. And I think that's what a lot of people do, is that they are influenced by the people in their circle. And the fact that you mentioned you looked out of your circle was huge. Do you think that applies or happens to a lot of people still right now?
Yeah, I mean, people are like typically willing to go down the path of least resistance. And the path of least resistance is the one that's typically going on right around you. Like, if you walk out the door, you're probably going to go get fast food. You go down the street, there's more fast food options. You're probably going to still eat fast food. But like, if you travel to Rome or if you travel to Greece, you're probably going to try foods outside of what you're typically used to. So you have to, again, like burst that bubble of like your circle to start experiencing and getting new skills and experiences.
Who has been, you know, outside of your circle, right? Outside the military, I guess you could say. Right, that's the way your life was for 6 years. Who were the people that majorly influenced you, or if there was a specific person?
So the person I know was like my older brother. He was a product designer at Expedia, and I went to visit him, and I was like, "This tech thing is interesting."
You visited the HQ?
We didn't really. Yeah, I visited the HQ in Seattle. Okay. Yeah, Seattle, and I was just so surprised by how he was living, because like we come from the same background. My dad was in the military as well. We were just like middle class. But to see him like thriving in another state outside of like where I was born, which is where a lot of people end up, I was like, wow, this is cool. But me and him don't really talk like that. He's like 10 years older than me. So after that, I started to, again, look outside of my circle on YouTube. And I've like studied, not just watched, but studied so many YouTubers.
Really?
Like, I studied you. I studied Bukola, Jossie, Mayuko, Jarvis Johnson to a T to figure
Jarvis
out everything
Johnson,
that
Mayuko.
They did.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is it that you learned from them?
What I learned from them? I think it's that like every YouTuber shows the glamour. Like, hey, this is really cool. And then obviously people are like, oh, I want to live a really cool life. But to get there, you can't just hop and immediately start living the glamour. So let's say I wanted to start a YouTube channel like you. I didn't know there was like hundreds of hours of research of like what camera, what mic, how to record, what framework, frame rate, editing, all that stuff just to say, hey guys, I'm Jeremiah. So they showed me the glamour and I didn't know what was in between, but I learned so much trying to achieve like the glamour that they were showing.
What do us content creators get wrong? Right. We share the glamour, right? Amazing. Health insurance was the main number one reason I joined tech. I didn't realize I'd make this much money. Right. Mm-hmm. But what's the things that we should share that we don't?
I feel like there's like a false reality of like, hey, if you learn to code and you study, you will get a job, you will break into tech and you will make money like we do. But that's like the end product. Like I was mentioning before, that's the glamour. What we don't show is the middle parts of like, yo, I'm up till 3 a.m. trying to learn this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to show that because people don't want to watch that. And if like people don't want to watch it, your videos won't get views. If videos don't get views, you won't make money. You won't want to continue. So it's really hard, but I guess just level setting throughout the video, like, yo, I'm in Korea. But like, it took so long to get here. I had to stay up till midnight. Just adding that additional like context of this was the reality for me to get here is helpful for people. So they're not like just dreaming every time they watch your video. They can like say, okay, there's some hard steps that you need to take to get there.
That's true. You know, they don't see the stress that you have learning, the doubts that you fight every single day before tech, probably even during tech, it depends. They don't see they don't see that even we would compare ourselves to others, how someone's doing so much better. How did this person get it? For me, I was just friends with so many other people trying to learn code on the internet, and I see them get a job for me, or I got a job, they got a job, but they're already making six figures and 2 years in, I'm making 45K, right?
Yeah.
Even when it came to YouTube, same thing, you know, these people blowing up before, like Mayuka, I saw her first video, day in the life. I messaged her right away. Hey, can I have you on my channel? Can we talk or something? And she blew up immediately. I'm like, dang, that one video got more views than all my videos combined, right? It was amazing, right? People don't see the parts where we get discouraged. How hard is the path to where we are today, right? I didn't make six figures until 5 years into my career.
Yeah, and that's like realistic.
Yeah, right. And, you know, your journey was pretty interesting too. What people probably don't know is that I actually tried to get you to work at my company, Airbyte.
Right. I was interviewing everything.
Right. And you obviously didn't join Airbyte. You're at Slack, which I'm very happy for.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you're open to share why you chose Slack over all these other companies you were interviewing at. Because you were interviewing a lot of companies, even Meta.
Yeah. I was.
The video.
Like, was that 3 or 4 years ago?
After I was laid off during the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, and then you got so many like job offers. So I decided to do the same thing. I made a video like, yo, I got these skills. I can do this. I can video edit. I can code. I can be a product manager, whatever. And then after that, I got like requests to interview and talk to hiring managers from Meta, Google, like all thing. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. So I, at this time I've taken a break off YouTube to just like focus down, study leak code and just, try to get a job and feed myself after I got out of the military. And I interviewed with about 5 or 8 companies, got offers from a couple, maybe 4. And one of them was Airbyte, one of them was Slack. And I thought to myself of like, what is important to me? And as you know, like content creation is extremely like lucrative. You can make tons of money. You can build an entire business. And one of the things that I valued was my time.
Yes.
And that was like the thing I was scared about of like a smaller company, because you have to wear a lot more hats. You have to do like a lot of work, a lot of time. So I wanted to join a company to where it was like output based. So like I don't have to put in like technically 9 hours a day or 10 hours a day. I can just have a lot of output, add a lot of value to my company, and I'll be able to work flexibly. And that was one of like the core tenets of Slack, was like asynchronous work is the future. You can work when it's convenient to you, as long as you get your work done. Yeah. So that was like one of their values in line with one of my values. And that's how I can like make content and work a full-time job without getting burned out because I have all of these avenues. Yeah.
That's a good, that makes sense. I'll tell you this. Yeah, that wouldn't have happened if you, I work in a hypergrowth startup, not just a startup, but hypergrowth. And things change quarterly, maybe monthly. The hours are put in, right? It's insane, right? I do miss that. When I worked at New Relic, you get your work done and you're just chilling the rest of the week. Right? I do miss that for sure. Right. And I guess the benefit of working in a startup is if that startup does well.
Yeah. Right?
With all the options that I receive, if it does well, if we get acquired, we go public. You can, you know, I'm chilling. I'll be chilling for a while.
Yeah.
That's if that happens, and that's a big if, right? No, but that makes a big, that's a big decision. And what helps you make that decision? Because, like, you know, not a lot of people, you seem very self-aware, right?
I try to be.
It's an important skill that not many people have. Is there anyone that helps you do that? Is there anyone in your family? Or what makes you so self-aware to help you make these wise decisions?
Well, I think I'm the smartest person in the world, and it was until I started to, like, again, go outside of my circle, listen to podcasts, read books, where I'm just like, oh my God, I'm wasting so much time in the morning scrolling an hour on my phone, or listen to another podcast. Yeah. Oh, I could be making my YouTube a business and making 20K a month just on my spare time.
Yeah.
So people outside of me that have a lot more experiences and are willing to share those, I just try to siphon information wherever I can. And I feel like that helps me become like a better individual.
That's what I've been doing actually recently. So I've been exercising a lot recently. Mm-hmm.
I've seen that, yeah.
I woke up at 5 a.m., started walking at 5:30 a.m. I went on like a 3.5 mile walk today. And one thing I've been doing to help me go on these long walks while exercising, all I do is listen to podcasts, health podcasts, technical podcasts, just learning. And it's been such a game changer for me. It's something I wish I did sooner, right? Hence why the...
What podcasts are you listening to?
It's a lot of health podcasts. So like the Huberman podcast, Peter Attia, Lex Friedman, Joe Rogan. I like listening to when he has like scientists come on, health people come on. Those are the podcasts I love listening to.
Do you listen to Colin and Samir by chance?
Yes, I do. Oh yes, that. Yeah.
Oh, they're
so
good.
Yeah. Those podcasts too. It's amazing. And it's perfect for like, you know, just when I'm walking or exercising. And so one thing I want to ask about you then, right, is that with your journey to where you are today, life seems great right now, but life isn't always going to be great, right?
Right.
And so what are some regrets that you think you'll have 10 years from now?
Some regrets.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to make a lot of money, and I wanted to make a lot of money because of the opportunities that it buys you. And now that I do make like a lot of money, very blessed to say that sentence, I bought more things. Like I bought a luxury BMW X3.
I bought a Tesla, dude. Oh, gosh.
I saw that. And I'm just like, wow, now I have to work to be able to afford this BMW, this house, this vacation. So I guess I would have tried to be a little bit more thoughtful in how I plan these larger purchases, because now my main goal is to have zero debt, pay off my house, pay off my car, so that I can do content. Yeah. Like, if I had no expenses, I could wake up and just try to be a YouTuber. I could do that. But now, since I have all of these expenses, I have to work at my day job longer, which is not bad. I love my job as a senior developer advocate at Slack. But if I had my choice, I would be a YouTuber. I would travel the world. I would, donate. I would, go to Africa and meet up with, a lot of my subscribers. But, I wish I would have told my younger self to be like, hey, ease off on the glamour that all these other YouTubers are showing off.
Did you buy it brand new?
Yeah, I bought it brand new. I'm leasing it, though, so I have an opportunity to give it back in, 2 years and, downgrade. Okay. But,
Do you listen to Dave Ramsey?
I don't. You don't? I don't like his
ideologies. You're talking about paying off everything, your car payment debt. Because that's what I've done. I paid off all my credit cards, right? And I paid everything off, and then I have this darn Tesla. And that pisses me off. I kind of regret buying it. I don't regret it, and I do. I can easily afford it, right? Like, the payment on that is, 4% of my income, of my monthly income or whatever, after taxes, right?
Dang.
So it's, it's nothing, right? But, again, it's $40,000 I could have just thrown into the S&P 500. mm-hmm. that would have grown significantly in 10, 20 years, right? And so when I think of that, I'm like, dang, I'm just going to pay off this car fast. And I am curious because you were making like what, 70, 80K in the military?
I wish. No, I was making, let's see.
Well, that's
I
what officers make.
I got $2,000 every paycheck. So what is that?
Okay. That's around, oh, it depends where you live. Yeah.
Like 50,000. 50,000 okay. Living in Florida.
Okay, living in Florida. Okay. And then you jumped and you don't need to share your salary now. I know what it is, right? It's increased significantly. Multiple times,
like
right?
Up like six times.
Yeah.
The what it was in the military, which is, again, a huge blessing.
It's, and especially with the RSU, the stock price increasing. Oh,
yeah.
And, okay. Yeah, with the stock pricing increasing, how do you manage that influx of income? Because, you know, I was struggling for my whole life, right? After being mm-hmm. kicked out of my house, you know, even when my first 4 years in tech, same thing, not making enough, just barely surviving. And then now making multiple six figures, right? I start spending every dollar because I didn't know how to handle it. That's also my biggest regret. And then mm-hmm. on top of that, making 20, 30, 40K on YouTube per month. Right. And it's like, and I would spend everything. And when I spend, I would try to invest in my YouTube channel, buy all the nice cameras, equipment, and contractors, you know, and now, you know, and so I regret that big time. Now I live off like half my check. I don't even like spending money anymore. Right. And so I only learned that 7 years into my career, but 3 years into making six figures though. Right. So I only learned that recently. Now I'm saving everything and investing now. So how did you manage that?
I mean, I've always been pretty money savvy. Like even when I was making 50 grand, which is a good salary for a lot of people, I would have this like really robust spreadsheet of like X percent goes here, X percent goes to savings, X percent goes to clothes. And now I have that same spreadsheet, but the X percents just look a lot bigger. But again, my goal now, like even though I'm making like six times more than I did in the military, I'm not buying six times more clothes and six times more shoes. I'm trying to like just stack all of that cash so I can pay off my house.
Yeah.
Because once I pay off my house, I'm literally done working. Like, you know how YouTube works. We could literally make two videos a month, and we could do that for the rest of time. You're fine,
dude. It's amazing. That's actually my goal too, which is cool. My goal is to pay off the house in like 5 or 6 years, and that's only calculating my tech income. I'm not even including my YouTube income.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right. So I mean, the houses are pretty cheaper, like 500K.
Yeah.
Depends. I want a 700K home though. Hopefully. Well, yeah. But anyway, so you know, right. And so that's my goal too, because like once you pay everything off, oh my god,
opportunities just open up. Freedom.
And when you work, it's because you want to work,
mm-hmm.
right? And now you work because you want. It's different. It's not because I need to pay off the credit card, car payment.
Yeah.
Totally different. What I've noticed though, and what I've seen, right, is people who are in tech who make multiple six figures, or say six figures, and they don't know how to handle that money,
mm-hmm.
right? That's terrifying. And that doesn't just happen to people. A lot of people in tech, it happens to NBA players, NFL players, right? What do you suggest to people? And I know this is thinking far ahead for everyone listening who's just getting a job in tech or trying to get a job in tech. What are some things, are there any like suggestions that you want to give them to make sure that they don't make my mistake?
I think track every dollar helps. So like, if you don't know where your money's going, it's really hard to like redirect it to investing, redirect it to savings, or even like trips or like a $10,000 watch. But like, if you start tracking like the little things and you know where like every dollar's going, then it's a lot easier to redirect money and say, oh, did I spend $200 on Fortnite skins? So tracking everything is like the first step into like being able to actually use the money that you're making for things that last.
Why did you leave software engineering?
Why did I leave software engineering?
You were a software engineer in the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
worked for Space Force, Air Force. It was a good time.
And you built your own version. Was it React or Angular for the military? Because they can't use open source products, right?
Oh, it was a database management system MongoDB.
Yeah, MongoDB. Mm-hmm. Which is freaking impressive as hell. And so why'd you leave that?
Well, software engineering was just a means to an end. Like the end is me at 38 years old, being on a beach, doing whatever I want. And I thought, I saw online that software engineering was the best way to go about that. I like puzzles. I like solving things. But I realized that you are pretty limited to your creativity. Like there's going to be a product manager and designer coming up with the designs and the features that come next, and your job is just to make those things happen. So didn't really know it, but I'm a creative person. I have a lot of ideas and thoughts that I want to share with the world and how like I want to accomplish things. And I saw that advocacy was a way to do that. Like right now, as a developer advocate, I don't take tickets, which is like the amount of code that you work on as a software engineer. You take a ticket of like, change the home screen to blue. And that's what you're working on that week. But as a developer advocate, I like walk into work, I walk into this chair more accurately, and I just think, I'm like, I think we can reach 10,000 developers, maybe 200,000 developers with this video. I think that would serve them. I think we could head over to San Francisco and do a workshop with them. I think that'd be really valuable. There's just a lot more creativity that comes with being a developer advocate, a lot more flexibility in your schedule and the type of work that you do, which is what I really appreciate.
Yeah. And I think to add on top of that, we're not technically software engineers or write code as much as we used to. But oftentimes, we'll make just as much, if not even more.
Yeah.
Developer advocates are paid pretty well.
Yeah, I'd say like at the software engineering level or more. But we do a lot of things. We have a lot of skills that are in short supply. Like there's a lot of people that can code, but there's not a lot of people that can like make a YouTube video, make a blog post, write code, travel, engage with customers, have empathy, sitting on customer meetings, talk to sales, marketing, which is everything that developer advocates do, which is why it's so hard to hire for advocacy.
Yeah. What is the hardest thing about your life right now?
Offloading. So as like we started, like I was a one-man shop. I started learning to code in the desert in a little room. And as I've grown in my career, I've gotten like a bigger computer. This computer takes two people to carry. I've gotten more money into my business. I can't answer all these emails. I need to hire someone. I have a lot of lights. I need to research. I got to outsource a lot of things in my life if I want to have a life, because otherwise all these things that we do outside of work and at work will consume every part of the day.
I think that was my biggest regret for myself, was taking on too much by myself. Right. Doing YouTube like crazy, making 2-3 videos per week, working full time and still traveling to conferences. Right.
Yeah.
And that definitely was detrimental to my health.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And one thing I learned, and I share this a lot, working to make so much money, especially on YouTube. Let's not even worry about tech. And then when I was hospitalized in the Philippines.
Oh, right? Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And I'm like, I didn't think, when I was on that bed and like feeling like I was going to die, I didn't think about my nice car, my maxed out gaming computer. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about my dog. Actually, I thought about my dogs, like who would feed them? But, okay, sorry, YouTube, don't cancel me. right? I didn't think about any of the nice stuff I made, how much money I made, how well I was doing. All I thought about was I just want to live, spend more time with my family. That was all I cared about. And so now that's definitely my number one priority. That's why I cut off how much I spend. I live way below my means. Just save and invest, and happiness is number one.
I used to think that like money was the goal. Like I want to make $1 million. I want to have $1 million in the bank. And now the goal is like, I just want to be able to like do anything I want so I can spend my time how I want. While money is a means to that end, I originally thought that money was it. Like once I have like $300,000, I make $200,000 a year, that's it, I'm done, I'm perfect. But you have to use that money properly to make sure that you have that time to spend with your family, your dogs, and do what you want in life.
And you always want more. It's never enough.
Right.
Right. Make for $100,000 a year. Oh, my dream. Got there. Oh, this is not enough. Not in California.
Yeah.
Then you hit 200 and then 300 and 400. And then, you know, I guess 300, 400 is like, all right, you should be satisfied. Right. But it's never enough. You always want more.
Mm-hmm.
How do you fight that?
I think, I mean, with everything that I try to do, I try to look at the end goal and then work backwards from that. So, I mean, if your end goal is to work until you're 60 and you after working in tech for 20 years, you could probably be bringing in 600, 700K a year. If that's your end goal, that's what you want to do when you're 55, 60, kudos, get that done. But if you want a life that's different than that, to where you're retired at 45, you have to start taking the steps to make that happen now. So look at the goal and then work backwards from that.
Do you think that, and you kind of emphasized this on this already, but just looking at the money, right, can cause people to make the wrong decisions. And like you mentioned, like, well, all right, I make 100K a year. My life is good forever. It can be depending on your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. Well, okay. So I guess I'm just talking about myself right now. I call myself out way too much. I should stop doing this. But like, you know, I just worked for money. The jobs I chose would just be based on how much I'm paid. Even if it's $10,000 difference. And a company paying $10,000 less would probably be better for my mental health. Right. Those are definitely big regrets I have. Choosing something only for the money. How do you tell someone who's learning right now or who works in tech, don't do that? how would you put that in your own words? Don't be Chris Sean. Unlike and unsubscribe right now.
I forgot what podcast it was that I was listening to, but it was like there comes to like a point where you should be putting a dollar value on your free time. Because a lot of people put a dollar value on their 9 to 5, and that's a really easy concept to get your mind around. Like, hey, if I'm going to be here from 9 to 5, I better be making at least $95,000. And everyone can do that. Everyone in the world has the ability to associate their time with a paycheck. But what's more important than like the time you spend at 9 to 5 is that like your 5 to 9, what are you doing outside? And if mowing the lawn takes you 2 hours and that's 2 hours away from your family, put a dollar amount on that. And then if it's cheaper to outsource that, outsource it. So you can spend that 2 hours with your family, with your kids. And that's what I've been trying to do with a lot of my time is like saying, hey, is it really worth it for me to be doing it? If not, I'm going to outsource it so I can spend my valuable time doing something that I really enjoy.
Congratulations on getting engaged.
Oh, thank you.
And congratulations to your brother getting engaged a month before.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. 1 month apart. He did it in Hawaii. Where did you propose?
I was in Mexico, Cabo San Lucas.
Oh, that works too. Oh my gosh. That's so amazing. So gorgeous. Yes. Now, one other thing I do want to talk about though is what do you think? Where do you see where you'll be in your career, let's say 5 years from now? What do you want to be, right? Be exactly where you are today. Will you still be happy if your exact position you are today, 5 years from now? Or would you be terrified if you weren't promoted by then or X this, X that?
I mean, I'm like incredibly happy right now. I'm ahead of schedule. I think I mentioned to you that during my interview, they promoted me to senior, and I was like, I was not even expecting senior, but I'm very thankful. I'll take it for sure. So I would be happy right here. It's a blessed life. I have a very stable-ish job, really good work-life balance. I have good activities on the outside, but in 5 to 6 years, as we mentioned, I'm trying to pay off my house in 5 to 6 years so that I don't have to work. I have the opportunity to say, you know what? This has been a great job, but I'm going to go do my own thing. So that's where I see myself in 5 to 6 years. I still want to progress as a developer advocate. We recently hired a director, and he's so smart. He's just a big bundle. I'm going to call him out. Director of Developer Growth and Engagement. And this individual just has a wealth of knowledge, and I just like staying as close as I can to this person because they're so smart, and everything I learn at work, like being like empathetic and learning about people, helps me with my personal thing. So I want to grow at work, but if I don't, that's fine because I have goals in 6 years that don't require me working for anybody.
Which is definitely the end goal. I feel like that's the end goal for so many creators.
Yeah.
Right? Mayuko, for a while after she got a job at Netflix, kind of makes sense. I've seen a lot of people who are, you know, she got burned out. It's Netflix, right? It make bank, but gosh, it's not easy. She quit and she went back into tech after 2 years, I think, after 2 years, right? Jason from Netlify, VP of DevRel there, quit to start his own company, right? My former manager at New Relic, director of DevRel at New Relic, quit his other job at DevRel in the W3 company to start his own startup, right? B. Dougie quit as a VP of DevRel or director of DevRel at GitHub to do his own company.
Crazy.
It's crazy. And even my former manager at Airbyte, Swix, quit to start his own company, right? Why are so many people, especially in DevRel, it seems like, what do you think? Why are so many people in DevRel quitting?
I think we are very capable people, and the fact that we're not just writing code. We are thinking about the marketing. We're thinking about the sales. We're thinking about our end users, our customers. So we have a lot of ideas and, for the most part, a lot of the skills to start something, to start our own company. So, I mean, it's a risk and reward. If you can manage the risk of starting your own thing, why not? We have all the skills. We have all the knowledge. We have the drive to do so. So that's why I think that people are like jumping to like start their own thing.
Working in tech, or I maybe let's say corporate in general, after X amount of years, I think the politics can get tiring, right? The politics, the culture as well can be tiring, and sometimes you just want to try your own thing, right? I just interviewed B. Dougie yesterday, so I have all these things in my head, and he was making a lot.
I'd imagine.
A lot, right? And he... And I want to say throw it away. It's not like it's bad thing. He's the CEO of his own company now. Mm-hmm. But he threw that away to do something on his own for something he genuinely believes in, right?
Yeah.
It's so amazing the opportunities that we can have in tech, right?
I could never imagine like just someone like, let's say like a teacher was like, yeah, I just got promoted making like $600K a year, but I think I'm going to start my own school in my backyard. Like, what? Like, it's so weird that people are like giving up these huge salaries, this great work-life balance to start their own things. But I think it's good for, like, the culture. Like, to see that there's more than just working for Google or Meta. Mm-hmm. Like, you can start your own thing and it can be great because you're great. You have the drive.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling to me, too. it's right? GitHub is owned by Microsoft. Right. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft bought GitHub for like $7.5 billion. He was there pre-IPO, which is, yeah. So, okay. That also explains it, you know.
Wait, what does that mean? What's pre-IPO? Just for anyone.
Oh, pre-IPO is, let's say you join Microsoft as a new employee. They're already public. You receive probably a couple hundred shares per year, maybe not even 100, right? You can sell those shares right away. It's equivalent to, you know, let's just say it's $30,000, $40,000, maybe $100,000. If you join a company before they're acquired, right, before they go public, let's say you receive 10,000 shares. If that company gets sold or acquired, those 10,000 shares that were worth $10 are now worth $80 per share. Mm-hmm. Instant millionaire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. So that's something he went through, and that's amazing. That's something I hope I go through, right? And hence why at a startup you work so much. I work so much. It can be very, it is tiring. It really is.
Yeah.
But if the chance of going public and just, gosh, that nice mansion down the street from me, and I live in a small house. I don't live in a nice
house. Got your name on it.
That nice mansion down the street that I see in Zillow every single week.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it will be mine one day. Actually, to be honest though, that mansion won't make me any more happy. Just living in my house now, having that money in a bank, that makes me happy. That would be great.
So what's the next hop for you? Do you think you will stay at the startup level? Do you like the culture of startups, or do you think that you want to go for a more stable company, or do you want to do your own thing?
Gosh, I can't say all the above, but that is all of the above, right? I know I can easily make like $500,000 if I do my own thing, but in tech that can go into the millions, right?
Yeah.
So I almost quit not too long ago, actually.
Talking
to my former manager, Swix, right? And I told him, Sean, I'm making $30,000 a month on YouTube right now. Like,
Part-time YouTuber.
Yeah. Damn, that hurts, right? Oh, but okay, so that's true. Part-time YouTuber. Well, still working, honestly, 30, 40 hours a week on top of my job, right? And the one thing he told me was, yeah, Chris, that's amazing. You're making that. But in tech, if the startup you join does really well, that will be multiplied by so much more. Mm-hmm. Right, and that convinced me, okay, I'll stick it out.
Yeah.
Right, and then he left. He left Airbyte to start his own thing. He left Airbyte to do his own startup. Like, yeah. Anyway, I'm happy for him. Right, and so, okay, so what I would really want is do my own thing, for sure. Who wouldn't be happy doing that, right? And I think it's my anxiety that definitely gets to me, because I do have an anxiety. Mm-hmm. I do have anxiety. And just, gosh, depending on yourself to get that paycheck, especially if I plan on having a kid next year, getting married next year, it's terrifying, right? Support my parents. And so my solution to that was cutting my check. I mean, sorry, my expenses in half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So now my expenses, if I didn't have the Tesla, is like $4,500 a month, which is nothing, which I can easily pay out with pay off YouTube alone.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So that, so that's what I've
done. Two brand deals?
Yeah, two brand deals, right?
Yeah.
So that that will take care of it so easy. So I've done that. So now if I ever lose my job, okay, let's just do content full time. Yeah. But also at the same time, I do want to move up more. So I think I told you before, I never cared about the title. I've never fought for a senior title, right? No matter what. I left New. So I was making $160,000 a year at New Relic, not including RSUs. That's just base, not including bonus too. They were going to promote me to senior in December, where I would be making $210,000 to $230,000 a year.
Dang.
I quit in October.
Your quitting stories are always are always such a spectacle to watch. I love it.
You know what I mean? Like, I could have had that title and then kept that title to every other company I joined. Mm-hmm. Right? But I didn't, because I'd make more on from YouTube than I would from a promotion, if that makes sense. So I never really cared about it. But now, just because I'm competitive and I want to be better than Jeremiah, I'm trying to aim for that now and maybe go up to director level at a larger company. So startup's nice, and I want to try it for a couple more years, but I'd like to go back to a larger company down the line.
Okay.
Right? If not a startup that hopefully gets acquired and it becomes a large company, that would be great too. So that's my end goal for sure.
Got it.
But my family, peace and happiness is number one before mine.
That's for sure. Kind
of, you know, that sure. immigrant mindset. I'm not an immigrant. My parents were, but it kind of, you know, that's kind of how I see it for me.
Okay. I love that.
What do you think about the tech space right now with ChatGPT? Oh, it seems so like ChatGPT is, it seems like ChatGPT is actually not as popular anymore as it used to be. Oh, it's going to come up still, but sorry. Mm-hmm. What I mean is the hype isn't, it's not
at all the hype.
What I mean, the AI is there. I mean, the hype isn't as hyped as it used to be, mm-hmm. but what are your thoughts on that?
I think it is one of like the most beneficial and helpful pieces of technology that have come out in like a long, long time. Mm. When I was teaching myself to code or even learning like Final Cut Pro, like a video editing software, I had no one. I was doing it in a small room and I was just by myself. Yeah. But now I'm using ChatGPT as like almost a mid to senior level engineer, probably mid because half the time it's not correct. And when I have a question, I don't Google it anymore. I have a conversation with ChatGPT.
Yep.
And I feel like that levels up my abilities like tenfold because I don't have to waste valuable time like looking through GitHub for the right answer. I can ask ChatGPT and get the answer within seconds, and that allows me to be more efficient with my time. So I think it's like an incredible tool if you use it properly.
Yeah, it's well. Do you see it replacing engineers?
I don't think it will replace engineers, like in the next 10 years. I don't know where it will be in 10 years. I'm 100% sure. I will stand by that fact because the creativity of humans and having a human in the loop is what makes things feel good. The user experience, like an enjoyable user experience. And I think if you take out the humanity from steps as big as like engineering, there will be like tons of oversight. Maybe it's more efficient, but it's like it opens you up to a lot of like hacking.
A lot of people leave comments on my videos when I talk about AI, and a lot of them say the same thing. Well, that means companies will need less engineers because one engineer cannot do more work, mm-hmm. resulting in less pay.
Interesting.
What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I definitely think it's a tool. So just like when React came out, everyone was like, I guess React simplified front-end engineering a ton. So now you could have one engineer do what they could in vanilla JavaScript. That takes two engineers to do in vanilla JavaScript. Said that weird. You could have one React engineer do the job of two vanilla JavaScript engineers. So it was just another like tool that helped people be more efficient at their job. So if ChatGPT is a thing that I need to learn as a software engineer, you need to learn as a software engineer, learn it because it will be a valuable tool to an organization, which means if you have that skill in your tool belt, you're valuable to the organization as well.
And React developers make good money. By the way, how's Austin?
Oh, it's amazing. I toured every single major city when I was getting out of the military. I toured Hawaii, lived in Honolulu for a bit. I lived in Santa Monica near Los Angeles for a bit. New York, went overseas to Spain to check it out. Austin was the best all around. I love it.
I was looking there. I'm not going to lie. I want to live in a state with no state income tax. It's just nicer on the check, too. Right now, property taxes in Texas is insane. One of the reasons I haven't moved there is just, gosh, it's still like having rent. it's kind of crazy. But one of the places I've been wanting to move for a while is Austin. I was looking at Zillow probably a couple months ago.
Right, so check it out.
Dude, and I want to. I really do. To be honest, I really want to. Austin's amazing. A lot of people are there. It's the middle of the country. If this does well, flying people out to Austin. I mean, who doesn't want to fly to? No, I don't care. I hate Vegas, but I guess people don't mind flying to Vegas. Vegas is so fake, though.
Yeah,
right. But Austin's nice.
It's super easy to get here, get around the country. It's super trendy, so there's always like fun stuff to do for like 20 to 40 year olds. And yeah,
why do you have to say 20 to 40? Is it because I'm 35? Jeez.
No, I'm just saying like,
oh, my heart. Because
I play Ultimate Frisbee like every Sunday. And there's always just like a range of people around 20 to even 50. Then they're just like hanging out. But like if you have that want to like do stuff and like go have an outdoor life, go to bars, music festivals, stuff like that, there's all that for you.
If Slack offered you a $50,000 pay increase to move to San Francisco and work from there in the office.
No.
$100,000.
No.
Oh, that was a long that took a little bit.
I had to calculate what I valued and no.
Yeah.
Because again, it comes down to what I want, which is the freedom to not work. The house prices out there are not realistic to have some, cuz I bought a bigger house here in Austin because one, I could afford it at the top of my budget, and two, because I want to grow into it, have a family here, and pay that house off and not have to move. Can't do that in San Francisco, even if I did get paid $100,000 more.
Yeah. And the size of the house for triple the price, probably double the price.
Yeah. Right. Probably triple to get like something that was near this size.
Quadruple probably. Yeah.
Quadruple. No, because this is like quadruple. I have a 25 square foot house here.
Oh, that's 1.5 to $2 million.
Yeah. Dude. At least 2 million.
Santa Monica too, if that was there. So why did you choose that then compared to Santa Monica?
Santa Monica felt a bit too polished for me. Everyone seemed to walk outside on their A game. Like, they were all dressed up, and not just because they wanted to be dressed up, because they wanted to appear as they were. So that was my experience living there. San Diego was a bit more real, like the city of San Diego. Yeah. A bit more real, a bit more relaxed. Not people worrying too much about, like, networking, just a network. But, yeah, just not... The people weren't as friendly as they were here in Austin.
That's one of the reasons why I left California. It's just everyone's trying to outdo each other. I mean, everyone tries to outdo each other. But it's, I don't know. It just seems like different. I want to live in L.A., San Francisco. You know, I like where I live in Vegas. It's just I get to be me. But Austin's nice. Where is a place that you would... So I actually was meaning to text you this. But you were, I think you were in Korea
somewhere
at the time. Yeah, you were somewhere. Where would you recommend living in Austin?
You can't go wrong. Like, everywhere, I would just try to stay as close to the city.
Really? How come?
Everything happens in the city. There's pockets everywhere. Like, North Austin is really nice for, like, families. South Austin is up and coming, and there's a lot of, like, more grungy places that are really cool. But it's up and coming. And then... East Austin, I would stay away from, actually. Okay. Unless you're like, it's a developing area. So that's like the first place I went to go look at, because I was like, oh, I'm going to buy a house for like cheaper. 400K. And then in 10 years, it'll be worth 800. But like, we went walking around the neighborhood and it was just a bit sketchy because it's being like developed and gentrified at the moment.
Yeah.
And then West Austin is like where the millionaires live.
Yeah. Okay. So West Austin. Okay. Noted.
So West Austin, Krishan. Yeah.
Okay.
I live in North Austin, which is...
Okay, no. So South Austin then. Okay.
Stay far away from me. I'm not doing these podcasts with you every week.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
It's nice there, man. I mean, Vegas is nice. There's a lot to do. No, there's not a lot to do here. There's nothing.
Have you visited here. Austin before?
Mm-mm, I haven't.
You gotta visit, Christian. I'll take you around.
Really? Okay. I'll be there. I can fly there tomorrow.
See you there. We'll go to Rainy Street.
Oh, gosh.
Make moves, Chris. Make moves.
Dude, no. Honestly, if we were going to do if I was a flatter next week and let's say let's do a podcast interview or something, that'd be 100% tax write-off. Oh, my God. That'd be so nice. That's the one thing I like about this. I was about to go to California this weekend. I changed my mind last minute, but to do a podcast interview, and it would have been free pretty much.
Oh, love it. Yeah. Just the thing, like everything that I don't spend a lot of money like out of my own pocket, like Jeremiah people's salary pocket. All my toys that I get are from YouTube. Like I'm about to go pick up the new MacBook 15-inch as a gift to my fiance because she's my brand manager, but it's a write-off because she manages all the stuff. And I get a new toy. I love it. All the sweet toys I like.
It's not free, but it feels free.
It feels free because all you did was post a video, and now there's this money in your bank account. It feels like it.
And it's legal, right? Yeah. It's legal.
This is not financial advice. Don't sue us.
No, it's not financial advice. We don't know anything about money.
Anything.
No, that's everything I own, dude. This camera, like I did the sponsorship with one company. It paid $9,500. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what can I buy? Right? It's just like, it's extra. But now it's so interesting. Now all my income from YouTube, right? Other than like paying my contractors and stuff, dude, I don't touch any of it. Now it just stays there unless I absolutely need something, right? And sometimes when I need something, I just tell my work and they buy it for me.
Yeah. Right. I remember they were super nice about that, like setting up your at home studio.
This chair SM7B, it broke and they bought me one and they sent
no
me
way. Yeah, that's my next purchase. I love those mics.
Oh, you don't have that. Okay.
I have the Blue Yeti.
You have the Blue Yeti.
Don't laugh at me. Dude. I bought a new laptop this weekend. I got the new aperture lighting, like the super sun lighting. And then I got an ND filter for my camera. And like the last thing I need to do is just get a new mic. Honestly, I had a video called, did you see that video that I made called How I Spent Like $17,000 Last Month?
Yeah, your rent's so that kind of video, expensive.
Yeah, yeah. That video paid for itself like so many times over because now, I'm not sure why, I think it like pops me up for like Austin. So now when there's like an event in Austin people want me to go to, they look at that video for Austin creators and they pick me and I'm like, oh, I guess I'll go to F1. That sounds fun. So just so many cool things happened from that one video.
I have one video that's made me like $36,000.
Crazy how that works, huh?
It's an affiliate for some program, and I only mentioned them twice. Sorry, two videos, but one. It's mainly because of one video, and that video has like I think 400,000 views or something, and that made me $36,000.
Jeez, Chris!
In 1 year, I mean, it's not that. I don't know. I get okay. That's not. That's a lot. Okay,
that's
okay.
Good. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's not bad for sure, right? And it's kind of crazy. And I didn't expect the video to do that well. It's just I want to give value, and hey, if you want, you know, check this out. And it wasn't paid for. It wasn't a sponsored video at all. It's just the affiliate link.
Just a video with the affiliate.
Yes, one video. Yeah. So, dude, YouTube is the way to go. And you mentioned you have a business. What is this business you have? You mean Jeremiah People's like the YouTube business? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, the YouTube business, the media conglomerate, TikTok, YouTube, shorts, you know, all that stuff.
How do you do that though with creating content for work too? How is that? What was that?
How do you creating content for work?
Yeah, you do YouTube and then you also do content for work. How do you manage it?
Just like I manage it on the personal side. So I look at what videos could be potentially like most valuable impactful to our audience.
Yeah.
Put it on like a tracker. I use Notion personally, and then get around to it when I can, film it, use our editor. It's just the same thing I do personally, but I do it at work at a different scale.
You have an editor? Like, do they work for New Relic or contractor? Not New Relic, I'm sorry. Do they work for Slack or is it a contractor, the editor?
Slack and Sales. So Slack is owned by Salesforce, and Salesforce has like their editors that roll up underneath them.
That's so nice. You don't have to edit your videos. My gosh.
Sometimes I do just because it's a small video. I'm like, this would take me 2 hours to explain to them where I need my cuts, or I can do it in 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, for sure. Same thing here. Gosh, Jeremiah, thank you so much for being on here. Is there any last words you want to share that with the YouTube world? When I say YouTube world, engineers or aspiring engineers who are learning code right now, like looking back at your life or looking at, you're still, how old are you?
26 and a half.
God, I'm turning 36. I'm so old.
We're basically the same.
Am I 36 or turning? I don't know how old I am. Okay, that's just a sign of old age.
It's very relevant.
But in your very young life, what do you want to share if everyone else learning how to code right now trying to get their foot in the door?
There's two things now, Chris. The first is find someone who has already achieved what you're trying to achieve. Reverse engineer like what they did to get successful. And that's usually what you need to do to become successful. And the second would be to subscribe to Jeremiah Peoples. Always be plugging. Go crazy.
Yes, yes. I'll make sure to leave a link in the description below. But seriously, though, Jeremiah, thank you so much for being on here, man.
Absolutely, Chris.